In my dream, I'm driving a sleek, racing green Jaguar automobile. I'm driving very, very fast. At least 100 miles an hour, maybe faster. I'm in the fast lane. And I come to an intersection, and I swing the wheel to the right, and I zip round, and the car fishtails, comes to a stop. I'm safe. Get out of the car, shaking a bit. Notice that I'm dreaming at this point, and notice also that there's an enigmatic figure I hadn't noticed before who advises me to open the trunk of the car. I open the trunk of my dream Jaguar automobile, my racing green speedster. And inside the trunk, I'm fascinated to notice medical monitoring equipment. There's a blood pressure gauge, there are all the scanners you see in a modern hospital, and they're all fitted compactly into the trunk of the automobile. And my enigmatic dream guide says to me, tapping his finger on several of the readouts, particularly the blood pressure, says, "You better be careful with this vehicle. It's a wonderful vehicle. It might take some effort and time before you find another vehicle as good as this one." And I wake up. Whoa. Now, this is my own dream. And it didn't take me very long to get the message. My automobile in the dream, as your car may be sometimes in your dreams, was a pretty exact metaphor for my physical body, a point underlined by the enigmatic dream guide showing me that the medical scanner's in the trunk. My behavior with this vehicle in the dream of driving recklessly fast, taking turns without slowing down, not taking care of my vehicle, was also a pretty exact metaphor for the way I was living at that time. Stressed out, rushing from one thing to another, not sleeping, not eating right, generally charging ahead through life as if nothing could ever hit me or stop me or smash up my vehicle. That kind of dream, and perhaps you've had your counterpart to that kind of dream, that kind of dream is a very simple, dramatic, and useful example of how, in a quite natural, spontaneous way, our night dreams give us a constant readout on the state of our bodies, the state of our health, what we might need to do to take better care of our physical vehicles in life. As we've already mentioned, dreams are body talk as well as soul talk. What is so strange about the fact that our bodies should try to speak to us in dreams in order to let us know what is going on inside it? Our body tells us in dreams how we should feed it, how we should work it out, or let it rest. It tells us when it's stressed out. It tells us when we are driving it too fast through life, as that dream told me. So this is one of the great values of paying attention to dreams, that through dream work, through catching and attending to your dreams, you put yourself in direct contact with your personal dream doctor, your personal inner physician, who is not going to charge you anything, is not going to check on the state of your health insurance, but will give you advice free, gratis, and for nothing because he or she is on your side. It is so silly that out of fear that we are being told in dreams that we might be getting sick, we slam the door on those advisories. Because if you pick up those advisories, you might find you never have to make that visit to the ER room or doctor's clinic, because you can do something in a timely way to avoid the possible problem developing in the body that the body tells you about through your dreams. So this aspect of dreams, noticing early warnings about health situations, is one of the most important day-to-day uses of dream work. But you know, our dreams not only show us what might be developing in our bodies in timely ways, they give us images we can work with in order to promote self-healing. Visualization, guided imagery, has come into fashion, long overdue fashion, as a great way to promote self-healing. But in this respect, the most valuable images you can find to work with are your spontaneous, personal, authentic images that will often be the gifts of your dreams. A woman dreams that there are bats all over her basement and she really needs to clean the space out. And when she goes through the process, through dream reentry, going back through the dream gates into the remembered image of cleaning out the basement, she notices a tremendous change in her body and symptoms that had been developing seem to go into reverse in a very benign way. In all sorts of ways, personal imagery coming through dreams will give you an opportunity to reshape, revision something you don't like. You can do this for yourself. You can sometimes do it in conjunction with other people. Let me tell you a personal story about that. I had a friend who had been diagnosed for cancer. I was very concerned of the state of her spirit. She had just heard about the death of someone she loved from a very similar disease. And all her confidence and hope and energy were ebbing low. She's really going into a bit of a nosedive. And one night in a conscious dream, we're good friends, we have permission to check on each other. One night in a conscious dream, I decided to go check on her. And I found her in her dream, or what seemed to me to be her dream, in a very lonely, desolate place, feeling very low, surrounded by sinister, threatening, snake-like presences and shadows. I noticed a circle of women who seemed to be empowered and spirited, maybe healers, were dancing and holding some ritual nearby, but she was blind to them, deaf to them, lost in the desolation of her own sorrow and fear, surrounded by these threatening, flickering, snake-like shadows. I was very saddened by this. I felt all of her pain and fear and grief, and I had no idea initially what to do until it came to me in a purely spontaneous way to grab two of these snaky things and wind them together. When I did this in my conscious dream, they became a caduceus, the staff of healing, still the symbol of our medical profession, although people forget the oath that goes with it, or at least the deities to which it was originally addressed. And when the caduceus is formed in my hand, it comes alive, it glows like burning gold. And I pointed at my friend with the intention of directing healing intentions and good wishes towards her. And she vanishes. And I think, good Lord, what have I done now? I notice her in a different place. She's flying about, happy, frisky, jolly, full of life. She grabs my hand and we fly off together in my conscious dream. And we explore some situations in which we might have shared other life experiences together. One of them is in Renaissance Italy. And I see myself writing in Latin. And I come out of the dream wondering, as you might wonder, how much of this is, quote, just imagination, unquote. How much of this is wishful thinking? How much of this is simply my human desire to help a friend combined with fantasy? I couldn't answer that question for myself until she called me the following day to report that she had had a dream of me. In her dream, she told me we had gone flying together, and she felt wonderful. And I had taken her, or she had taken me, she wasn't sure which, to some location in Europe where I was sitting at a table writing in Latin. So we have the overlap of dream memories, which is great confirmation. You know, you want to check the veracity of these things, the transpersonal reality. You can learn to do this by techniques we've already explored. You can learn to consciously enter a shared dream adventure with another person and receive confirmation in your own way of these things. Best of all, whether it was because of my dream caduceus or because of something else in her field, she had come out of her blues, she was up again, she was full of fight, full of vitality, and proceeded to go through her life-threatening illness to a point of healing and remission. I think that shared dreams with good intentions can help other people. As a matter of fact, I think that all good thoughts and intentions can help others. I think that a good thought, intention, a prayer, a request for help is never lost. It's never wasted. Our thoughts and feelings are already actions. We learn about that through dream work as in other ways. So be open to that possibility that by working with dreams in this way, you might be able to promote spontaneous healing, not only for yourself, but for others near and dear to you. Now, there's a darker aspect of this. If thoughts and feelings are actions, as we learn through dreams as in other ways, then they can harm as well as help, which is why it's rather important for us to learn ways to become more conscious of the contents of our minds and our emotions at all times. Dream work is, again, a wonderful way to become more aware, waking or sleeping, of the contents of your mind and of learning to choose and discriminate what thoughts and feelings you will give your energy to. Until you learn to do that, you can, in unconsidered ways, harm others simply by thinking bad thoughts about them without even bad-mouthing them. One of the things you can learn through the practice of conscious dreaming is not only to monitor your own thoughts and feelings and how they affect others, but to notice how the thoughts and feelings of other people can affect you. We live crowded up against each other in a typical contemporary environment. Our auras are all intermeshed, particularly in big cities. We pick up, even without noticing it, the negativity of people and situations around us. It can affect our health, our well-being. It can throw our feelings and our balance off. Through dreams and through becoming more conscious of the contents of our thoughts and feelings in general, we can learn a great deal about this and begin to establish healthier psychic boundaries for ourselves. Let me give you a dream-like episode from Waking Life to introduce this theme of establishing healthy psychic boundaries, for which we are going to experiment again with the techniques of conscious dreaming. A supermarket close to my home, I would notice, after several visits, a pattern in myself. Whenever I approached a particular checkout aisle, however I had been feeling up to that point, I would find myself sinking into a miasma of despond. I'd start feeling miserable and down and blue and at odds with the world and bitter. And this would continue until I'd got outside the supermarket, back into the sunshine, or sometimes not even until I was halfway home. Well, after a few experiences of this kind, I paused to look at what was going on here. Why were my thoughts and feelings changing so regularly at the same point in the same store? I started looking at the clerk at the checkout counter, a woman who never made eye contact, never smiled, never responded to greetings. It seemed to be at war with herself as well as the world. You'd see it in her body language, bumping herself against the cash register, cursing, swearing, really down. And I realized, as I entered her energy field, being a reasonably receptive person, I was picking up all this psychic clutter and misery stuff that was coming from her, at which point I had an opportunity to choose, to make a conscious choice about how I was going to behave. The choice for me seemed to be, was I going to continue to go to this aisle, or was I going to go somewhere else? If I was going to continue to use this aisle, I'd better do something consciously to turn things around, so I didn't continue to go wading through this wallow of despond. So I decided to give it a shot, being a fairly activist character. I went up boldly to this checkout, greeted the clerk, gave her a smile, got no eye contact, no response. She's cursing, she's dropping the goods, she can't find the barcode, she can't work out the prices, she gives no recognition to me or anyone else in her environment. So I decide to be bolder and brasher still, and I say to her, "You know, you're going to have a wonderful day from this point forward. It's going to be as if the sun came out in your life." She looks up at me. She hears the guy from out of town and the funny accent. And I can see something going on behind the eyes. It might be, shall I call someone? I've got this screwball here who talks funny. She blinks. She says nothing. I leave the store. A couple of days later, I'm back in the store, and I decide I'll give it one more shot. I really got no results, not even mixed results from the first experiment. So I go up to the same aisle. This time when I greet her, she looks up. And she responds to my greeting. She says grudgingly, as she's going through the stuff I'm buying and ringing it up, "Something funny happened that other day," she says. "Oh, yes? You know, you were right. My day turned around after you came into the store. I mean, just things turned around. Everything seemed to turn out right." And when I left, she actually smiled. Now, what's going on here? I think this is a case of positive projection. You know, we're all very aware of negative projection in our lives, but the power of positive projection is much underrated. You can make a conscious choice to project good intentions, healing, happiness, joy to other people. And that's not a bad thing to do. You can choose, instead of buying into people's self-limiting beliefs, to encourage them to believe that they can go to the stars, that in fact they are bright spirits, they are starborn. They can know joy. They can get over their present problems. Through dreaming, we see these possibilities more clearly often than we see them in waking life. That was a moment when I became aware of a pattern in waking life. But often we blunder around in our waking lives, buying into these patterns, picking up other people's thoughts and feelings without recognizing what is going on. Dreams that reflect this kind of issue include dreams in which your house is being invaded or burglarized, or your vehicle is being broken into. These could, of course, be literal advisories to attend to the security of your house, the security of your vehicle. But on a symbolic level, dreams in which you see your house invaded, you see your space violated, you see your vehicle broken into, are often dreams about your need to secure your psychic boundaries so you are not being violated, abused, imposed upon, subjected to other people's agendas in an illegitimate way. They're advisories to you to start setting up some adequate perimeter defense, to start building healthy psychic boundaries. Sometimes these dreams are quite dramatic, of course. People dream of huge container trucks plowing through their house. And you ask them, having established that this is unlikely to happen because of the location of their house, you ask them, what in your life would remind you of a container truck plowing through your house, tearing out your living room, tearing out your bedroom, destroying everything? And sometimes they think of a person in their life, a rampaging, violent, aggressive, abusive person, who for them is the counterpart of that container truck plowing through their space. And when they make that recognition, they start thinking, aha, I'm going to try to fix it so that the person who reminds me of the container truck can't continue to drive through my private space, smashing and flattening everything in sight. So if we recognize the need to set up and maintain adequate psychic boundaries, what in practical terms can we do about it? Well, the first step is to make it your practice to monitor, whenever possible, the contents of your thoughts and feelings, note sudden shifts in how you feel, in your mood, in your energy, and notice how these might be related to intrusions into your space, either psychic intrusions or people physically imposing on your space. We live pushed up against each other today, and this requires special vigilance in relation to intrusion into our space. Secondly, there are a group of visualizations you might care to experiment with that will help you to establish good psychic perimeters. On the psychic or mental level, the only boundary defenses that are truly likely to work are mental or psychic defenses. You need to establish, through the power of visualization, a shield or screen or array of protection for yourself that can prevent negative or harmful influences coming through, not only in terms of your waking life, but in terms of your dream adventures, because you don't want to go wandering off into some areas of the beyond without having taken care to protect both your dream body and your physical body in its own space. So what are the visualizations you could use? One of the simplest and most powerful that I use and recommend to others is to see yourself creating a wall of light that becomes a sphere of light around yourself and the space in which you live, the space you wish to protect. You begin by physically walking the boundaries of this space. It might be around your home or around your apartment or around your workspace, for that matter. It might even be around a larger space shared with other people. You physically walk around the boundaries of your space. You should start in the east and walk around the circle until you return to the east. And as you walk, you should visualize yourself laying down a line, a ring of light that becomes a wall of light and expands above you and descends below you to become a sphere of light surrounding the space in all directions. The sphere of light is something you should see and visualize and sense and feel until it becomes intensely real. You might picture yourself laying it down with a sword of light that you carry in your hand, a lightsaber, or simply doing it by the force of your focused intention. As you make this wall of light becoming a sphere of light intensely real and vivid to yourself, your intention is this. This wall of light will be a welcoming beacon to those who come to me with love and with good intentions. It will be a consuming terror to those who come against me with unclean or unhealthy or malevolent thoughts or intentions. This is the beginning of laying down a psychic perimeter defense. If your visualization is deep, if the wall of light, a wall of fire to those who come against you for harmful purposes, is absolutely real and vivid to you, then it will work against possible psychic intruders. Even stronger, perhaps, than laying down the wall of light, becoming the sphere of light around your space, is to invoke the protection of guardian figures, guardian entities who are equally or even more real to you. If you are working in the way of the shamans, you will call your power animals to be protectors and defenders of your space and protectors and companions of you in your conscious dream journeys outside the body, so that in your space and when you walk abroad in your physical body and when you fly in your dream body, one or more of your animal guardians or your bird allies will fly or walk with you. You might see one of these figures standing at each of the quarters around your perimeter defense. You might see other figures, guardian figures, hovering above or below you. If you belong to a religious tradition and its images and characters are fully real to you, you might invoke and see standing at the four quarters around your space, and perhaps also at the above and below, guardian figures of your tradition. If you come out of the Judaic or Christian tradition, you might see the archangels standing at the four quarters about you. Raphael in the east, Michael in the south, Gabriel in the west, Uriel in the north. Great guardian figures. Let them become real to you if this is your tradition. If you come from a different tradition, choose the figures that are real to you from that tradition. It doesn't matter very much which figures you invoke or use, as long as these truly evoke your belief, your courage, your faith. If you can see these figures truly, energize them with your intention, they will be real not only for you but for others who are traveling outside the physical body on the planes of reality that cannot be seen with ordinary eyes. And in this way you will create truly an effective mental and psychic shield around yourself and those you also wish to protect. Let me give you a couple more suggestions of visualizations quite familiar to practitioners in many esoteric and spiritual traditions cross-culturally. We did earlier an exercise that I called the sun in the solar plexus, which leads to you visualizing a shield of light all around your physical body, extending beyond your energy body, which might appear egg-shaped to others. It's a good idea to set up a perimeter of light around yourself like this from time to time, particularly if you're going to become a conscious dreamer actively traveling to other planes of reality. There are occasions in your life, particularly if you're voyaging between the worlds, where alternatively you might find you need to conceal your light. I discover this as a shamanic practitioner when I find myself required to travel to certain realms of darkness, lands of the dead, lands of the unclear dead, the dead who have not achieved the higher light, in order to bring back perhaps a lost part of someone's soul that has been hijacked, taken to that place. Once I had to go to such a place to bring back a part of the lost soul of a young man who had been abused in school by a Catholic priest. Think of that. Think of that ravishing of soul as well as body, that intrusion, that violation by a father figure, also a religious confessor and religious authority, who steals soul. After his death, it seemed, the paedophile priest, the ravisher of young boys, had taken part of the soul of this young man with him into a place of darkness where he was hiding with similar criminal souls and held that part against its will, so it was lost to the young man who was not whole. As a practitioner of shamanic soul retrieval, I found myself obliged to go into that space. I had no desire to go there. I do not recommend this for casual entertainment purposes. I do not recommend crossing into such territories unless you have a clear and present need to do so and are adequately prepared. In order to come and go from that territory where I had to retrieve that part of lost soul by force and by invocation of higher authorities, I had to robe myself in a robe of darkness and hide my light in order to come and go safely from that place of the unhappy dead, that black void. Some shamanic practitioners and some members of spiritual orders will use the technique of visualizing themselves encased in an indigo dark egg of invisibility, which conceals their light and their identities so they can safely come and go where it is not generally safe to come and go. This is a powerful meditation and a powerful technique, and if visualized correctly and with the right intentions, it does work, and it is another method of traveling safely between the worlds into those dark spaces which sometimes require our courage to do something good for ourselves or others. We've already entered again into the shamanic realms, and I want to comment briefly here on how dreams, both spontaneous remembered dreams and conscious dreams, on which you embark with the intention of dreaming, can be helpful in identifying areas that might require shamanic methods of healing. I'm thinking of two areas in particular, in addition to the problem of boundary invasion. I'm thinking of soul loss And I'm thinking of energy loss, which are connected but not necessarily the same. The shamanic perception of human illness and misfortune is that a great deal of it is caused by the fact that when we suffer pain or trauma or succumb to negative habits or addictions, we are likely to lose a part of our soul, a part of our basic soul identity and vitality, which is perceived with clairvoyant sight by shamanic practitioners and sometimes by others as a being that resembles the person who has lost that part of soul as she appeared at an earlier age. So if I encounter someone who has suffered soul loss and I am required to help that person, I will go looking with the aid of my guides for a being I will perceive as a younger version of that person, living on another plane, perhaps stuck in some part of this middle world, perhaps hiding in a closet back in the house where she was abused as a child, perhaps lost and straying in some other world. My knowledge of these things actually begins with my own personal experience of soul loss. As I mentioned, I had a wretched childhood, blessed or blighted according to your point of view. I had pneumonia in both lungs 12 times between the ages of 2 and 11. A doctor with a bedside manner said to my mother after round number 3 of double pneumonia, "Oh, give up on this kid, he's never going to make it, you better have some others." Well, this kid kept coming back and coming back, but at a cost, as well as a benefit. The benefit was knowledge of the inner worlds, knowledge that the real world is a dream world, knowledge of spiritual teachers from my earliest childhood. The cost was losing parts of myself, parts of my playful, frisky young boys who went away because I was so sick and so lonely and so wretched. I remember what it felt like when my lost boys began coming back to me. There were several of them, particularly aged between 4 and 9. It felt like a bullet of light entering my heart when I got them back. And I felt the energy, the playfulness, the spontaneity, the need to run and sport in the woods that they brought with them. So I know about this from having suffered it and having had to find the means of recovery. As a matter of fact, I believe that true shamanic healers are always wounded healers in the most literal sense, that they do not truly take on anything that they are not willing to experience and deal with in every fiber of their own being. That is my belief about these things. So soul loss is a major shamanic preoccupation, and we really need to make the understanding of soul loss and soul recovery more accessible throughout our society. Colloquially, we understand it well. Part of me was missing. She's a few sandwiches short of a picnic. I mean, colloquially, we have phrases we throw out all the time that reflect the fact that we're not always all there, or that person is somehow not always there. Dreams guide us as victims, as well as healers, to the means of recovery and the timeliness of soul recovery. Someone comes to me with a dream in which she sees her 5-year-old self as a separate person, back in the childhood kitchen, where her father threw a mad tantrum and started beating people up, drunk one night. And I know that although painful memories have come back with that dream image, so has the possibility of soul recovery and whole-souled loveliness, as an old Celtic invocation says it. The possibility of whole-souled loveliness is there in that dream image of bringing back that 5-year-old. And when I helped to mediate the recovery of that 5-year-old for that woman dreamer, I saw the light in her eyes. I saw her dance. I saw her 5-year-old self shining in her face, in her body, in her form. So through dreams we discover where the missing bits, the missing soul parts of ourselves might be. We discover where the missing soul parts of others might be, and we help to bring them back. Energy loss is a related problem. You must know an energy thief in your life. We all know someone like that. You know, someone who leaves your batteries drained, you're feeling great before you spent an hour with that person, and you sulk and slink out, feeling absolutely flat, all the oomph gone out of you. On the psychic level, vampirism is a real phenomenon. It's not just because Anne Rice's novels are popular. There are people who drain our batteries. Dreams alert us to this phenomenon, and they counsel us on how to better guard our own energy so that we are not forever giving it to everyone else who wants it, without conserving our own resources and our own health and attending to our own needs. I had a dream about this many years ago, which was quite instructive for me. It was a time when I was giving a lot of my energy to a very depressed neighborhood. I mean, depressed in the economic sense and also in the sense that a lot of people there were very low on energy and pretty miserable. And I was trying to do some work as a community helper, really, to bring people back and help turn the neighborhood around. And I was so exhausted one day, I nearly drove off the road going home, and that night, which scared me, and that night I had a dream in which I saw myself standing in a public place, surrounded by people. And in this public place, I proceed to cut my wrists. I'm not trying to kill myself. In the dream, I cut my wrists, and the blood comes bubbling out, and I'm saying to everyone around me, "Come and drink, come and drink. There's plenty for all." I'm offering my blood like a public drinking fountain to all and sundry to come and drink my blood. Now, you know, a Freudian psychiatrist might say something about this, another kind of shrink might say something else, and who knows, they might have a point. But I know in terms of my practical health and survival, the message I had to get at that moment was I'd better stop giving my psychic blood, my energy, to all and sundry, without considering the repercussions on myself. I had been so fatigued the previous day, as I mentioned, I'd nearly driven off the road. So because I had been so obtuse about my own need to guard my energy, the dream source came after me in that powerful, indelible dream, saying to me what? Saying, don't give your blood to all and sundry without getting a return of energy. Don't make yourself a public drinking fountain to the world. You may have had a similar dream. You might even have had a dream about vampires. Vampire dreams are quite common in our culture. And again, it's not just because of the popularity of certain horror stories. There are psychic vampires. There are people who wittingly or unwittingly steal our energy. Some of them are living, some of them are dead. There are earthbound entities lost to the light that try to feed on the energy of the living. Sometimes they are trying also to feed addictions they acquired during life that they have not cast out simply because they're dead. As a matter of fact, one of the rather important things for us to understand about death is that people don't necessarily change very much just because they've passed the point of physical death. In fact, in the dream body, which Eastern traditions also call the body of desire, the appetites, emotions acquired in physical life can become ravening. So the alcoholic might become even more of an alcoholic, even worse because he cannot satisfy his lust for the booze in a straightforward way, but tries to feed that lust through the living people on which he battens. So through dreams, we discover the psychic vampires in our life, whether they are living or dead, and we can then proceed, having recognized the problem once again, to begin to establish some boundaries, cut the links that connect us to those people, guard our energy, stop spending all that time with that person who leaves our batteries drained, recognize the need perhaps to send along, to dismiss, to send off towards the light. An earthbound entity may be connected with us, and to seek, where appropriate, specialized help in some of these areas. That's as far as I'm going to go with the description of these shamanic areas in these sessions. But I would like to end this particular session on an upbeat note. I would like to give you some simple steps that you might choose to follow in order to bring the power of dream healing into your own life by methods well recognized and long popular in the ancient world. I would like to give you some simple steps, four steps really, that you might choose to take to follow the ancient practice of Asclepian dream healing and enter a sacred sleep in which you might hope that through the intercession of a transpersonal agency of healing, you might receive healing in the dream itself. As we've already discussed, people traveled from all over the Mediterranean world in ancient times over a period of many, many, many centuries to no less than 400 sacred sites or precincts associated with Asclepius, the personification of healing in the Hellenistic world. Asclepius might appear as a radiant youth, leading people from light into darkness. He might appear as a wise old man. He might appear in the form of a serpent, sacred to him. He might appear in the form of one of his sons, or a woman connected with his tradition. In any event, travelers to the precincts of Asclepius came hoping for the gift of a healing within the dream itself, not just diagnosis and prescription, but actual healing within a night of sacred sleep, finished that night, completed that night. And from the inscriptions they left behind at the shrines of Asclepius, at Epidaurus and other sites, one gathers that many of them did receive, or believe they received, authentic healing in the night of their sacred sleep. There were offerings honoring the recovery of eyesight, recovery from all kinds of disease and damage. In order to seek the sacred dream of healing, the pilgrims who came to the shrines of Asclepius went through four steps or processes for which we need to find our counterpart in our contemporary lives if we are to do this or attempt this for ourselves and others. The first step for the pilgrim on his or her way to the sacred dormitory of Asclepius was the journey to a sacred place. So if you are looking for sacred sleep and the possibility of dream healing, you want to consider where you are going to seek this. You might choose to go to a place in nature, even to an ancient site, or you might choose, quite simply in the context of a modern life, to establish a sacred place within your own home. In other words, to set apart a room, your bedroom or another room, form a circle of protection around it, call on guardian figures, light a candle, light incense, do anything else by way of a personal ritual that will establish that within this boundary things are different. Cross this boundary into this sacred room, and you are in a sacred place that will be honored. And by the way, you will make sure that no one crosses that boundary that you will lay down without your permission. So one way or the other, either by the journey to a special place in physical reality, or by creating a sacred space in your own home, you are performing the first step of Asclepian dream healing. The second step is your preparation for this night of sacred sleep and possible healing. You might wish to do something by way of personal purification and cleansing. It might be as simple as taking a bath or even a shower with sacred intent. Anything done with sacred intent is already an effective ritual, far more effective than any external ceremony and dress-up procedures. To take a bath, to take a shower, perhaps adding a little sea salt or some essence that contains some sea salt in the water, and make it your intention that as you wash yourself, you being cleansed and purged of all impurities, is already a huge step towards the experience of purification preparatory to the night of sacred sleep. You can decide for yourself what other things you might do or not do as part of your preparation, what you might give up for a period of time before the night of sacred sleep. You'll want to give up any mind-altering substances. You'll want to give up alcohol. You might want to give up caffeine. You might want to give up other things for this period as part of your demonstration to yourself and the source of your healing. I am here. I am ready to be cleansed. I am ready to be made whole. I am ready to contribute actively to this process. So that is step number two. Step number three is your invocation, which means quite simply your request for help. We often simply forget to ask for help from deeper sources in our lives. Ask and it shall be given. So decide in your own way what it is you are asking. Don't limit yourself. Ask as generously as possible for the most generous and fulfilling outcome you can conceive. I wish to be freed of all pain and weakness and infirmity. I wish to live my life generously and creatively. I wish to live from the heart. Statements along these lines have the right quality, but you must find your own words. You may or may not choose to address your invocation and your request for help to a particular sacred entity. It depends on your belief system. It depends on your basic belief. If you are going to address this to a particular entity, you must be familiar with that entity and truly believe in it and truly put your trust in it. Otherwise, forget the names. Better not to have them. Simply say, I ask the source of healing for help. And finally, on the assumption that your healing might come, perhaps in one night of sacred sleep, it has come like that to me and to many others I know as a miraculous gift. On the assumption that you may actually get what you ask for, you must consider what you will give in return. The whole universe works on an exchange of energies. If you ask something from the universe, from the Godhead, from the divine, from the fount of being, the source of healing, what will you give in return? Perhaps you will actually be prepared to give no less than everything. The greatest sacrifice, the greatest offering you can make is a self-offering to use your healing, your power, your restored life and energy and vitality for the service of soul and spirit in this lifetime. Make your decision what you will offer in return for the gifts you will ask for from the source of dreams and the source of healing.